goodness.
Thank you. How nice your introduction is. I'm not so special as our Damodar Prasad has said, but I will definitely try to shed some light on this question, finding our authentic path in spiritual life. Now I'm thinking a little, those who are in front, I think you're not afraid of me, so come a little closer in case more people will come later. Damodar, wollen wir ganz kurz was singen?
Ja.
Möchtest du noch kurz erklären, was wir singen? Weil ich, wir haben nach dem Text auf dem Post gebringt.
Ja. Gut. Yes. The song which we are going to sing is Jai Radha Madhava. It's a very simple four-liner, and I request you all to join me in singing this. We sing this in before lectures in order to set the mood, so to say. Oh, no problem.
Dear guests, just a small announcement for those of you who came with children. In the first floor, in the seminar, will be going to be a children program. So you might want to either bring your children up, or you can go with them. And in this way also we can make sure that there will be some peaceful situation here in the camp room. Thank you very much.
Jai Radha Madhava Punya Vihari
Thank you.
Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vacharine Nirvishesha Sunyavani Hare Krishna. So, can I please ask one of you, perhaps Jai Gopal, to put this little table in front of me, then I can put the book just there. My dear everyone, I remember many times sitting here, looking out into this room. There were times when it was fuller and even more hot. So be encouraged. You can do it. What I want to express is, yes, I know that when we visit the temple the first time and it's so packed, we look for our space, but this is nothing in comparison to what we had. And I want to address a question which has moved me very much. As some of you know, I took to the monk's path when I was very young. In fact, 17 years I was only old, and I had read a lot in spiritual literature before, but I only when the pressure of my surroundings to finally decide that I would become what my parents and the society around me expected me to become, when that pressure became very big, and I was placed before very difficult choices, did I decide to go to take to the monk's path. But just making an external change, and even an internal change, I suppose, was not so enough. It was not enough to dress in these cloths, to shave my hair. It was also not enough to take on a new belief system. I needed to really find what we could call my very personal, private path in the spiritual life. And it was not always very easy, because I could see the same things which were trying to push me in one direction were still working. In the old society which I left, there were expectations, there were social norms, there were promises that were made, and also on the monk's path, there were expectations placed in me, there were certain different but still social norms which were laid out to me in no uncertain terms. And there were also promises that if you do this, this will come. And in this way, I still needed to think, when I had joined the monk's path, what would be my authentic path, and not what other people expected me, and not I was not to be bewildered by the promises that were made. So, now where I'm an old man, so to say, in the evening of his life, I know I don't look like this, but I'm scandalously old, actually. I can say there are a few things I learned, and I'm content inside. I must say this is a wonderful gift, to be content. And I would like to share these few things. I could talk for years on this. Ultimately, I think the experiences in life are telling us if we are right or if we are wrong in our choice. It will remain an individual path for all of you to find your true path, but some ideas could be helpful for you. Good. When I started the monk's path, I actually I had an auntie who was a very interesting personality. She was a stewardess and flew all over the world, and she once told me, you really learn only when you travel and go into different cultures and meet different people. That was her thought. And when I started the monk's path, she gave me a very helpful book, Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse. And she said, I think you will be another Siddhartha, like all who choose the spiritual path will be another Siddhartha. And I made a few notes just to give you an idea what this Siddhartha goes through. He is a young man. He is the son of a Brahmana. These are people who live their lives according to real strict rules and regulations. And they get up at a certain time, then they go down to the river to take their bath. But it's not so easy to take a bath. There are many mantras to be chanted, many rituals to be observed. Yes, then they spent the first part of their morning in scriptural study, and they do various sacrifices, so on. And it's just very, very a very systematized, well-structured life. And Siddhartha was born into this and could understand, no, I'm not like these, like my father and his relatives. So he departed his father's house and joined a group of monks, wandering monks, goes through India at that time. And it is from there that changes keep on coming into his life. The self doesn't wait passively and then all of a sudden manifests and self-realization comes like this. No, selfhood is made in an active and perhaps ongoing process. You have to discover it and you have to keep moving. So after a few metaphorical deaths and rebirths, he has died to the life of a young Brahmin to become a wandering monk. Then that is not his authentic path. So he tries something else. He becomes a merchant and madly falls in love with a courtesan. Courtesan is something like a upper prostitute. What was her name? Kamala. Then finally he becomes, he gives up this business life and he again turns into something else. He becomes the student of a ferryman and studies, it's beautifully explained, on the bank of a river he studies life. It is said, as Siddhartha looks out on the river, he sees that all the waves of the river are really one water, one river water. And he discovers metaphorically that behind all the varieties of life, all the different outside appearances, there is a spiritual reality, and that reality is beautifully expressed. You can chant it with me, you know it all. A little bit the story of Siddhartha, a constant, you know, something old is left behind so that something new can arise. On the spiritual path, you also have to go through a few changes. If I would know as a beginner on the spiritual path that I would one day be like this here, with the experiences that I have made, with the changes that I have made and am still making, I would not have believed it. I thought it was more simple. But this constant change into something until you finally have it, your authentic self, that is the characteristic of spiritual life. Nietzsche famously said, become who you are. No? What he didn't tell us, that to become who we truly are, we need to make a few changes. What was right when I was young is now perhaps no longer the right activity. No, becoming who you are is not inventing something new or inventing yourself again and again. No, it's more like growing in what you are already. And I would like to give you two examples. When the seed becomes a tree, he doesn't invent that, oh, let me become a mango tree. No, he really grows into what is already there in the seed. The seed of the mango tree becomes a mango tree, but the seed of a lemon tree does not become a mango tree, it becomes a lemon tree. Or you could give the example of a caterpillar. When the caterpillar becomes a certain butterfly, he doesn't invent or create this. No, he grows into what is already there. So when you arrive at your unchanging self, it's not that you invented. No, you just grow into it. And as you grow, there are certain phases which you walk through. For instance, when you start on the spiritual path, the scriptures tell us you start with a neophyte enthusiasm. Therefore, when you meet someone who comes to Krishna consciousness, for instance, to our path, he in the beginning appears to be a little, let us call it, a little insistent, perhaps a little fanatic even. Yes, this is the beginner's enthusiasm. An example is given when a child is given a book which he studies then in the school. He's not yet learned. He doesn't know how to read and understand and apply it. No, but still you will find a child just very enthusiastic, walking with a book under his arm. And he thinks, I am a great scholar. I know everything. I'm just like Sigmund Freud or it's Carl Gustav Jung, or how they are called here, our scholar. No, it's a beginner's enthusiasm, and he will need to grow beyond this. In the same way, your spiritual path and moving on your spiritual path requires of you to move through different phases, and that means you might have to let go of a certain behavior and outlook that you had in the beginning. You will, in other words, very often again and again enter into the waiting room of God, where you wait for an appointment with a great healer who then brings you to the next stage in your spiritual journey. So it's nice to see, I made a note of that also. What is it that needs to grow? What is it that needs to shed old and immature identities that do not serve you any longer on the spiritual path? By the way, is it clear my language? Is it? It's not too theoretical? No, you can understand. Good, good, good. Just checking. What needs to change, what needs to move, is really the ego. The Sanskrit word for ego is ahankara. This is very interesting to look at. It means the I maker. And the ahankara will always form a sense of identity. For instance, when I was still in the material life, I thought for some time I'm the son born in a very in a relatively wealthy family. I am this. Then I thought I'm a wizard, like Harry Potter. I was interested in these things. I would change and adopt new ideas. And then when I joined this movement, I thought I'm a very, very talented monk. Then I thought later I'm a wonderful preacher. These are all products of the Ahankara, the I maker, which supplies us with a core concept of identity. No? Many of you I know who enter householder life, they think, oh, now I'm a father, now I'm a mother. No? This I-ness is one aspect of the Ahankara, the ego maker, the I maker. Then there's this concept of me, things that I express, things with which I express my I-ness, my name, a form, attributes, I'm a fat or slim, and then is mine, things that I possess, for instance, also relatives. Now, as you enter the spiritual path, you will have more and more enlightened understanding of who you are. And at the very end of the list, you will think, I'm part of a greater reality. I'm part of Krishna. I'm His. This is in Krishna consciousness. There are other spiritual paths where you feel I'm part of the all and everything. I'm part of God. It's very open. Your me will be different and the mine will be different. He is mine. He belongs to me. And as you enter this path, you come, let us say, from an enlightened concept of I to an enlightened concept of your identity. My spiritual master had said, at the beginning of the spiritual path, there must be an openness to question my present sense of I, my present identity. We call this in our language humility. No? You are willing to look and say, maybe I'm not this. Maybe I'm not a German. Maybe I'm not a father. Maybe I'm not a mother. And maybe I'm not a Swami. And so on. You are open with this. This is, you do not identify with the various faces of the ego. In his language, he said, beginning from the point of humility up to the point of realizing the supreme truth, the process is just like a staircase, beginning from the ground floor and going up to the top floor. And in all these steps, you know, as you move on, you more and more shed false concepts of ego. This is very important for those on the spiritual path. If you build just a new ego, you are not different from materialists, no? And you are fanatic and most probably a member of a sect. It is not enlightened. As you move on, you have, and this is humility, you have to be willing to look a second time and shed means to give up the false ego. So this is a little bit in general about the path of spiritual life. I would like to now be specific. But how do I know that the path which I've chosen is the right one for me? Well, you can see by the symptoms in your life. There is a text in our tradition which gives us three symptoms that should happen on your spiritual path. The first is there should be love and devotion in your heart. If your heart, with love and devotion, the heart opens. You become less judgmental of others. You like to see the sameness which we all share as humanity or as even living beings, and you develop things like compassion for others. You like to serve. You do not like to be served. Then there is parishanu bhavu. I have to translate Sanskrit. Yeah, direct experiences of God. If God only remains a distant thing, a theoretical concept for you, this is not very. Then you are will remain empty-handed and empty-hearted. And finally, the third symptoms to look for is that you develop a healthy detachment, not a forced detachment, but a healthy detachment from those things that harm your spiritual growth. No? You become a little bit like Socrates. Once Socrates was found on a bustling marketplace in the midst of Athens before one of these pre-medieval shops. You know, there were pens, there were pots, there were knives and so on. And his students came and said, Socrates, we thought you are above the cravings for pots and pans and knives and whatever. And Socrates said, I'm just enjoying the feeling of not needing all these things any longer. Oh, how many other things that I do not need? You know, he was just making like an exercise, perhaps checking his heart if he had developed already some contentment by whatever process he did, and therefore became naturally detached. No? So these are three things you might look out for on your path to see, is everything going well, and is the path really right for me? You should, if you found your authentic path, develop love and compassion in your heart. You should, in other words, have some experience of God. You should develop some healthy, I'm happy, I don't need this. We are like this, Gaur Krishna and me, as some of you know us, we travel a lot, and when we, you know, in airports, after you have passed through security, you come to these shopping malls, you know. They are full of Swiss chocolate, normally Swiss wristwatches. Your country is well represented in these shopping malls. So many things, hats. I don't know, because I don't look so closely. And each time when we walk through this, I'm turning to Gaur Krishna and said, I'm so happy, I don't need to stop anywhere. they don't carry anything of interest any longer. This should be natural, this detachment. That's something to look for. Another thing to find your authentic path is when you feel repeatedly called in one direction, it most probably has something to do with you. In other words, as you go through life and you repeatedly feel this area, this thing, meditation, it calls me. Or you feel, I want to address those who live in the temple here, repeatedly call to the things Vrindavan stands for. This is a sacred place with a very, very specific type of outlook on Krishna, a consciousness. Then, by this repeated calling which comes up, you know this is most probably my authentic path. Let me try and see. But when you repeatedly, walk with your good head against the same wall, then you might know repeatedly. Repeatedly means again and again and again and again. Then you might have to pay attention and say, this is maybe not my authentic spiritual path. So, good. Now I'm just now looking at the wrist and the watch. Now I will summarize what I said. The spiritual path, you must know, is something very, very natural. It is something, it means to grow what in one sense you already are. So as you move on, when you move closer to what you already are, you know, you have a certain feeling of contentment. When you, however, go further away from that feeling of contentment, you might have lost your path. The word repeatedly is necessary, no? It must be repeated contentment and repeated discontentment. Because remember, you are growing into what you are already there. It's there. It's like coming closer to a fire. When you come closer, you will feel warmth and you will see light. When you move away from the fire, you will feel colder and the light will go. No? So this is very important. There needs to be a constant readiness to face your, to let go of role models. The ego always wants to be appreciated. And you need to be willing to let go of this. I would like to give you a personal example. When I was in the world, I was a very driven personality. I wanted to excel amongst my peers and so on. And when I became a monk, I was still a driven personality. This manifested that, maybe after 10 years, I decided to make a fast of 1 year. Imagine, I only ate, these are good examples for Hare Krishna people when they relate to food. I ate only one apple a year. A day. No, year not. That is, no. A day, of course. I'm sorry. And that was extraordinary in our community. And everyone said, oh, you're very renounced. I mean, you should take sannyas really early. That is the renounced order of life. And inside of me, I felt a great satisfaction. But what was going on? The same ego, which wanted to make films and wanted to be known as an interesting young man, was still in the center. Only the food had changed. In this case, no food. genuine spiritual life is not that, you know, that the ego remains in the center. You have to know that the I maker, this thing inside of you, which produces identities and wants to be known, or you know, there are some eye makers where you don't want to be known, where you want to be the humble guy, and so on. This is this needs to be changed into your real, unchanging, true self. So what will you see on the path? This is general, this is universal. You should see more love, more compassion, because you see the equality of all beings in their happiness and distress. You should be able to have some experience of Krishna. If your life is such that you move about without experience of God, you have most probably left your authentic path. Remember, the authentic path is not dependent on any religious movement or process. The authentic path is where you become free from ego in its manifestations, that's the English word, and grow into your real, true self. There are a few things which help you. This is called the spiritual process. There was once a student who asked his master, "Master, tell me, what can I do to become quicker enlightened?" And the master answered, "As little as you can do to make the sun rise." Then the student said, "But wait a minute, you tell us all these rules or these processes? You say chant, you say meditate, you say divide your day a little, you say give up eating certain foods. If this doesn't contribute to my enlightenment, why do I do all these things? Why do you prescribe them?" The master said, "To make sure that you're not asleep when the sun rises." Spiritual practice is important. It helps us. It doesn't, it doesn't bring about the manifestation of God. We humans can't force him, not even by a wonderful meditation, to appear before us. But spiritual practice makes us more sensitive, so that we will actually see that the sun is already risen. Did you catch this subtle thing? Actually, God is surrounding us. He's everywhere. But we are fast asleep to this reality. By spiritual practice, we wake up and see, oh, he was always there. He is always there. Now I can see. So therefore, this spiritual practice, if you ask me, which is regularly done, which you do also in times when you are lazy, that is very, very helpful. In our tradition, we do five things. First is we associate with other spiritual people. That is very, very important. Some of us have just now returned from our bhakti retreat, which we do each year in the Swiss mountains, and you could see most probably how this association has brought more new wind under your wings, just like the wind which is there when you saw the paragliders. You saw they needed to catch the wind. So in the spiritual life, you become like a paraglider. You need to catch the wind of spiritual inspiration that carries you, and that is found with saintly people, with spiritual people. It's so important. They make a lot of wind, but real wind. And from there, you, in our tradition, you learn to chant the sacred mantra, the Maha Mantra. Learn from wisdom texts like the Bhagavatam on a regular basis, and so on. I don't want to go so much into the detail. At the end, I want to wish each one of you safe sailing. This spiritual life is the greatest of all adventures. Yes, it is. For some of us, you might say, oh, it's so intense. Yes, it's more intense than material life. But if you leave the process, and if you leave your enthusiasm like most do on the journey, then you will not cry all your tears, says Khalil Gibran. You will also not have all your joys. You know, intense spiritual practice brings you to a life where where things are really working, and the caterpillar is quickly turning into a butterfly. That what is really his destiny. Good. What do you all think? A big cup of tea to drink. Oh, I wanted to make it more simple. See, there is this delicate balance between effort, where you give your best, and grace, which has nothing to do with your efforts, mercy. So we all should find out a path where we can give comfortably our effort and then expect the mercy of Krishna. I want to give you an example. And in Vashana lives a saint. He still is there. He's now old and very old, and we do not know how long he will be with us. And he gave such a wonderful example of what is spiritual practice. That was just so nice. See, he lived on a sacred mountain, which meant he could not pass stool on the mountain. No one, whatever it's called, passes stool on the head of God. This is not done. Whenever he felt the nature's call, he went down the mountain. And there, at one place where the bushes were, he sat and he relieved himself, and so on. Now, there was one problem. In this area, there were tigers living. I still have seen tigers. They're not as big as the tigers in the zoo in Zurich, but they are. You don't want to fight with them or mess with them, as they say. So once some friends of the saint said, "Oh Baba," this is how they address him, "there are tigers here." So Baba said, the saint, he went under his bed and he took out a little stick like this, and he said, "I have stick." So then the people said, "Tiger is very big and stick is very small. What will it help?" And then he said something which has become my motto, actually. He says, "I try my best, let God do the rest." This is the delicate interplay of effort, where you try your best, and grace, no? And we hear in the Bhagavad Gita, yeya tamam papajati, a natural law of spiritual enlightenment. And the degree in which you try, in that degree, the Lord rewards you and takes care of you. Yes, Radha Priti, perhaps Radha Priti, yes. We have a microphone for you.
I guess, thank you for the wonderful lecture. My question is, I guess if you could go back to that, your younger self who did the Apple Fest, how would you do it different, or what advice would you give that person? Because it's it's like sometimes, you know, your intention is pure, but then once you get into it, you do start feeling your ego. So is it like, at that time, should you like back down? Or is there something you can do to like combat it so that you can continue? Because I'm sure there's benefit to doing something like that, an apple fast, or, you know, or whatever austerity you're doing or service you're doing. Or so how do you, like, when you feel that, get out of it? With it, or should you just back? Should you just stop doing what you're doing if you feel that?
Have you all understood Radha Priti's question? It's a very good question. What would I tell my younger self? It's very dangerous to speak to younger self because they have a lot of ego and they defend the younger selves. I would wait until it would my younger self would get in trouble, and then I would speak. Before, I would not speak because he would not be able to see. This is what I have seen as a spiritual guide. As you know, I'm giving counseling to many people, not just my students, which are a small group, and I have learned to be silent when it's the appropriate time to be silent, and to speak when there is an openness to hear. And most probably, or in most cases, that openness comes when people have, when students or younger self make mistakes and gotten in trouble. By the way, the whole spiritual journey starts in many, many cases. I'm saying it starts, not it continues, when there is some frustration. Because then someone can hear for and is ready for other frustrations in relationships. Frustrations and many things. My spiritual master once gave an interesting example. You will like it. He said, those who are here in this world are here for a reason. They want to experience their own, they want to be their own lords of their lives, so to say. And they resemble a little child who comes to the mother and says, I don't want your food any longer. So what do you want to do? Asked the mother. I will cook myself. So the mother gives the child a toy kitchen. There is no real fire in the toy kitchen. And the child makes something like toy bread, but it doesn't taste nice. It's not real bread. So after some time, when the child is tired of its toy food from the toy kitchen, he will feel a profound sense of frustration and real hunger. And goes to the mother and says, can I have a little porridge, please, or a little bread? I'm so hungry. And then the mother can give the real items. So we are like this in this world also. We want to be the Lord and the independent controller. And after some time, we end up in a situation where we are frustrated. It's an existential discontentment, if you want a nice American term for it. No, and that's the start for most of people's spiritual journey. They are discontent with the imitation food. They are tired of being the Lord. They know this doesn't work. Look at the Bhagavad Gita, Radha Priti. The first chapter is called the Yoga of the Vishada Yoga. It means of lamentation. Arjuna needed to come into an existential crisis where he was willing to ask the questions. And this is you know, a spiritual guide. Krishna didn't speak in the first chapter. He waited until Arjuna came to the point where he was having questions. And this is also on our spiritual journey. I would wait to my, I said, apple fasting. I came into, you know, for 1 year to just eat one apple a day is not very healthy when you are fully active. And I came into a really hungry situation. I could eat most probably I was really hungry. And I know it took me, I think, 2 weeks to acknowledge that I'm hungry. I didn't want to admit it. But after 2 weeks, you know, it was at the end of my... I wanted to go for longer, but then I understood. When someone came to me and said, you look very thin, I said, yes, I'm very austere, like a yogi. but I see you sleep much more than all the monks. How do you know? Because one value is to sleep also less for those who are going the austere path. Yes, and I can see that you are often very frustrated and you are venting your anger on others. Is everything really going very well for you? Someone was asking me, and then I had to admit, no, it was not going well, and I could make some changes. But if that person would have come in the beginning, I would say, that's a way of rejection in the German culture, to make this gesture. Good. Let me see. I see you, maybe. Konstantin, ich habe dich auch gesehen, aber ich will mal den anderen Vorrang geben. Good, we have a microphone for you. It's this coming from behind.
Mm-hmm. I hope to explain it clearly. Sometimes we see the other direction, that people, after many years of practice, they are loosening their standards and they criticizing those people who try to practice maybe very strictly, and they look maybe fanatically. And so they say, you know, I became more mature, I don't have to do these things, yeah, and offer like this, I don't have to shave, I don't have to do these things, and I'm more mature. So how can we avoid this side of the story and find a balance in between too much liberal and too much maybe fanatical?
Mm-hmm. That's a very, I think you speak from a genuine observation. You have seen this, yes. You know, one thing we human beings do, we always defend our position. We cannot live with us if we think we are not doing the right thing. So you will find everyone always defending their position. That's very normal. That's what it means to be human. Even a criminal will think I acted because of good intentions. You know, we humans can't live with self-criticism. When the self-criticism becomes too sharp, we all criticize ourselves, but when it becomes too sharp, we just can't tolerate it any longer. So we have to see really from an impartial source, if we are at all interested in truth, what is the good path. Yes, I have also seen, first there is this very strict following, sometimes mistaken understandings. And then there is the counter swing that is not following anything any longer. I have seen this. I have seen this. This is the story of all movements. Anyways, so you are correct in the observation. I think the word which we are looking here is maturity. The person who follows very strictly requires to do this not in a fanatical way, but in a mature way. And the person who tries to find out a less fanatic way has to see that he doesn't throw the good things overboard and has to be mature. And maturity, I don't know, what is your good name?
Maturity
is not so easy to come by. That takes years. Before an apple is mature, takes months, actually, not years. But before a human being is mature, takes decades. So this is, I think, what you look for. The swing from idealism to what some people call realism, I would say you have to have a realistic idealism. that would be maturity. But it takes time, and it's an individual journey. And by the way, I think when you start a spiritual path where you have not yet any experiences, you better follow by the letter to get somewhere, no? Good. My dear everyone, thank you very much. I'm looking now at the clock. I see other questions are there. Damodar Prasad, would you then guide us into what else we shall expect on this beautiful Sunday afternoon, which is not as hot as we are. It's not so hot like it. It's cooled down. Yes. Hare Krishna.
Vishwanath Satchinanda Maharaj ki jai.